double Torah portion, twice the Leviticus. As I've said to many of you before, the entire Torah is a chiasm. You've got Genesis at one end, and you got Deuteronomy at the other end, and then you got Exodus, and then you got Numbers. And the most important part of the Torah is Leviticus. Hebrews tend to put the most important stuff in the middle as opposed to Western writers who put it at the end. And today we are pretty much in the middle of Leviticus. Not quite. The middle was actually last week. And in addition to that, today's Torah portion itself is a chiasm. For example, you have, you can't sleep with these people, and then at the end of it, this is what happens if you do. So the entire Torah portion itself is a chiasm within the chiasm of the Torah itself. So what I want to talk about is love your neighbor as yourself. And Yeshua talks about that in several places. And I'll quote from Matthew 22, verse 35. One of them, a lawyer, asked him a question to test him. "Teacher, what is the great commandment in the law?" And he said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment. And the second is like to it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend the law and the prophets." So Leviticus is the most important part of the Torah. And then the most important part of the Torah is love your neighbor as yourself. And that's where we are today. Now, I was reading Rabbi Sacks. And he says, okay, got it. It's the most important thing. But why is it interlaced with a whole bunch of seemingly random laws? Next thing immediately after it says, love your neighbor as yourself, it says, don't sow your fields with two kinds of grain. Don't wear clothing that's a mixture of linen and wool. And you've got all of these random seeming laws that are around this most important part of the Torah. Why? And he gives an interesting answer, one that I happen to like. First, back up and say, Israel is designed to be a nation of priests. I will quote from Exodus 19, which is just before the giving of the Torah. So just before God descends on the mountain, he talks to Moses and says, all right, I want you to go make this offer to Israel and come back and tell me what they said. So the offer is, there Israel encamped before the mountain while Moses went up to God. The Lord called to him out of the mountain saying, this you shall say to the house of Jacob and tell the people of Israel, you yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession among all peoples, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words that you shall speak to the people of Israel. So the first thing to understand as we're going through all of this Leviticus stuff is Israel is designed to be holy. And we see over and over where God says in today's Torah portion, you shall be holy because I'm holy. Sacks then goes back to the creation. And what Sacks says is the creation itself was an act of love. God made all of this and us out of his love. So the question then becomes, if you have this great act of love that God did, and you have the nation of Israel who was taken as God's firstborn, as God's holy nation, and as a nation of priests, they then should reflect God. And God, as he set up his creation, did a whole bunch of stuff. You've all read Genesis 1 through 3. And one of the things he does is he separates stuff. So the first thing he separated was light from darkness. The next thing he separated is the waters above and the waters below. The next thing he separated is day from night. The final thing he separated was male from female. So all of these things are essential to his creation, these separations that he has made. And there's a lot of rabbinic teaching on it, and I'm not going to go into all that right now. It's very interesting. So you'll notice how many of the things that are going on in today's Torah portion have to do with mixing of things that shouldn't be mixed. immediately after you shall love your neighbor as yourself, then it says, don't crossbreed animals. Don't sow your fields with different kinds of grain. Don't mix wool and linen and wear it. And then we have all of these things that you're not supposed to conflate, because God separated them. And it's essential to the creation that it works that way. Side note, I was listening to Ron Dart, and he was talking about Jacques Rousseau. For those of you who don't know Jacques Rousseau, you're not missing anything. He was a French philosopher, 19th century. When I was an undergraduate in college, we had a survey of Western thought course we all had to take. We affectionately called it From Plato to NATO. And that's all I have ever read of Rousseau, is this little bit that I had in that survey course. Interestingly, Sachs is also talking about Rousseau. And so I figure if both Sachs and Ron Dart are talking about Rousseau, maybe that has something to do with what's going on. An overview of what Rousseau thought, and this, by the way, is bogus, but it's been very influential in Western thought, and it's why we're where we are today. Rousseau thought that children were born in a state of innocence. And what happened to them was civilization then screwed them up. So all of the stuff that's wrong with children is a function of their civilization. It's not a function of their birth. Therefore, if we get these little kids young enough and we jam them into a mold that we want, we can make perfect people. That's, in 25 words or less, what Rousseau believed. Well, he was very influential. What did Satan promise the woman? Do you remember? You shall be as God, knowing good and evil. So we have this desire within ourselves to be as gods. Rousseau says, well, these children are little plastic things that we can mold into anything we want. Therefore, we can make people perfect. We just do it right. That's Rousseau in a nutshell. And it's the thing that has influenced our education system. It influences just about everything, because even though it is wrong, no bad idea ever goes away. Once somebody broaches a bad idea, it's there and it never goes away and it keeps coming back. So what God is saying in all of these laws that he is putting together is, this is how I have set up my universe. This is how it works. For example, sowing different kinds of seed. Well, I separated these things at the beginning and I want them to stay separate. Don't mix them back together. So you have things that don't work in the creation, but you also have things that don't work in society. For example, all of the list of people that you're not supposed to fool around with. All of that is if you have this stuff running rampant in your society is going to go to pot. And by the way, we have all those things running rampant in our society today, and our society is going to pot. So what God has done in all this Leviticus stuff is he's told us how things work, how things are supposed to work, how he designed them to work. And as he's talking about the things that happened in Egypt and the things that happened in the land, he's saying, these people are doing all this stuff and their societies are such that the land is going to vomit them out. So what I'm telling you is, when you go into these places and you live among some of these people, don't do that stuff. Because I have set up creation so that it doesn't work. And it may seem like it works for a while, but it eventually doesn't. And that's what we're seeing now, by the way, societally. This stuff that we thought was going to work for a long time, but now we're discovering, well, it doesn't work anymore. So, as a nation of priests, I think I told you last time or the time before, and I got this from Sachs, it's very good. Priests are not supposed to be innovative. Priests represent God. God is stable. God is eternal. So the last thing you want is a priest just sort of rolling his own whenever he gets a wild hair. That was what happened with Nadab and Abihu. at the dedication of the tabernacle. They decided, wow, this is wonderful. What we're going to do is we're going to do something that never been done before, and we're going to go in there and honor God with our incense, and we're going to do it our way. God said, no, zap. And they both died on the spot. And the whole idea of Israel as a nation of priests is they are supposed to be stable. They are supposed to represent God to the rest of the world. So what God is saying here, and you shall be holy because I am holy, is A, you're going to be separate from the rest of the peoples. You're my special chosen people. And oh, by the way, you are to be stable. You are to continue to represent me faithfully. You are not to bring the stuff from the rest of the world in and meld it with my worship. Now, they did all that, and they got shipped off into exile to Babylon and Assyria and all those places because they didn't hew to that line. And God said, oh, you're not doing what I've told you to do, and the land vomited them out. So, let's talk about one of the things that's in today's Torah portion. Just as an example, I could have picked a lot of them, but I want to talk about Molech. Remember in our chiasm, it says at the beginning, you shall not offer your children to Molech, and at the end it says these are the penalties if you're due. The thing about Molech and offering children is the old gods are back and they are running rampant in the United States. The Baals and the Ashtaroth and Molech and all that kind of stuff. I don't know that people are actually burning children, although it wouldn't surprise me. But let's look at this tranny movement. I was looking it up, and there are glowing articles in the Hollywood press about all of the stars who are supporting their transgendered children. Will Smith, who's a very famous actor, Brad Pitt. Think about this for a minute. Why did people offer their children to Molech? Well, we want good crops this year. We want rainfall. We want victory in battle. So we're going to offer our children up as this ultimate sacrifice to Molech to get this stuff. What does Hollywood run on? Good press. Good reviews in the papers. The admiration of your fellow people. That's what they run on. And then the people that are admired and get good press and all that kind of stuff get the parts. They get invited to the best parties, etc. So if you offer your child to Molech by turning him into something he's not designed to be, and you get all of these glowing articles written about you, and you get invited to the best places and where you can proudly show off your little sacrifice, what is the difference? Is there any difference between that and offering your child to Molech? I don't think so. The motivation is exactly the same. I want a good business deal. I want good parts in this movie. I want to be accepted by all the people in Hollywood. Therefore, I'm going to sacrifice one of my children to get that. That's what's going on. And as I say, as far as I know, and as I wouldn't put it past it, nobody's actually burning infants, but they may be. You know, there's what, something like 85,000 illegal immigrant children are missing? Just gone missing. They don't know where they are. I don't either, but all I'm saying is all of this goes back to the ideas of Rousseau, which is children can be made into anything you want if you get them early enough. Now, I have a saying that I have just invented, and I like it. Reality is not plastic, it's elastic. Now, what do I mean? When I'm talking plastic, I'm not talking about the stuff your milk jug is made out of. Plastic is a word that means moldable, malleable, can be shaped into anything you want to shape it into, and then it will hold that shape. So the stuff you make your milk jug out of got its name because the nature of the material is that you can mold it into anything you want. That's why it's called plastic. But the word is far older than your milk jug. It simply means you can shape it and mold it into anything you like. Well, according to Rousseau, people are plastic. You can mold them into anything you want them to be. What I will say to you is, reality is not plastic, it's elastic. Now, the thing about elastic is you can also mold it into whatever you want it to be, but it eventually snaps back. And then the next thing you know, all of a sudden, it has snapped back to what it actually was. Did I say that so it made sense? What God's universe is, a lot of stuff in His universe is elastic. And what God is saying here in this Leviticus passage is, yeah, you can wear linen and wool mixed together. Yeah, you can sleep with the wrong person. And it may seem for a while that nothing has happened. It may seem that this is plastic, which means that you've molded this into something that you like, and now everything is fine in that new state that you have created. But what God is saying to you is, no, it's not plastic, it's elastic. Because eventually it's going to snap back. That's what the purpose of this stuff in Leviticus is. It's telling you that His universe is elastic. You may seem to be for a short time to be plastic, but it's not. And so if you go about assuming that you can mold stuff into anything you want, get away with anything you want, and in fact you will be as gods, being able to do anything you want, you're eventually going to get snapped because the land is going to vomit you out. That's what's going on here. And I will close with a poem, and I won't read the whole poem to you. For those of you who, unlike me, weren't alive in the 19th century, there was a poet, Rudyard Kipling. He was a Brit. I have a number of his books, but there's one poem that encapsulates what I'm talking about here. It's called The Gods of the Copybook Headings. And you can look it up on the internet. The whole poem was worth reading. I'm going to read the last three stanzas, but to understand what's set up here. In British schools, you had copybooks, which are little bound books that every student had, and that was what he copied his lessons on and so forth. The copybooks had a proverb at the top of each page. So as the kid was copying down something, he opens to page 10 and there's a proverb of some kind at the top of the page, and he copies his notes and does all that kind of stuff and turns the page and there's another proverb. So the copybook headings are these proverbs that are printed at the top of each page in the copybook. And as I say, they're right out of Proverbs, wisdom, literature, so forth. And the gods of the copybook headings in Kipling's poem are contrasted to the gods of the market. The gods of the market are whatever it takes to make some money, or whatever it takes to get what you want. So that's the contrast he set up here. And as I say, the whole poem is worth reading. But I'm just going to read the last three stanzas. Then the gods of the market tumbled, and their smooth-tongued wizards withdrew, and the hearts of the meanest were humbled, and began to believe it was true, that all is not golden that glitters, and two make four. And the gods of the copybook headings limped up to explain it once more. As it will be in the future, as it was at the birth of man, there are only four things certain since social progress began: that the dog returns to its vomit, the sow returns to her mire, and the burnt fool's bandaged fingers goes wabbling back to the fire. And after this is accomplished, and the brave new world begins, when all men are paid for existing, and no man must pay for his sins, as surely as water will wet us, as surely as fire will burn, the gods of the copybook headings with terror and slaughter return. What he's saying is, God's universe is elastic. It is not plastic. And if you go about your life assuming that it's plastic, at some point the elastic is going to kick in and it's going to snap. And that's what Kipling is saying here in his poem. At some point, the gods of the copybook heading are going to be back. And when they do come back, they come back with terror and slaughter, because there's some cleanup that needs to be done.